All right, it's been a little while, so let's do a brief recap. We're going to start on page 2 with the second section, Havamina de Gemara Minyan Hadayanim. Just to review very briefly what we've seen. We saw this basic concept called Zebor Elohecha B'Zebor Elohecha, the way you appoint a Beis Din when there's a monetary dispute. We'll talk about when exactly you do this, but at least in certain circumstances, what you do is you have Baal Din A, we'll call him Reuven, appoints his Dayan, Shimon appoints his Dayan, and then together, in some capacity, they appoint a third Dayan. So there's Machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to how this is done. Is it that the Baal Dinim themselves choose the third Dayan, or the first two Dayanim choose the third Dayan? That was one Machlokes that we saw between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. We saw a second Machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim regarding the ability of each Baal Din to disqualify the judge that is chosen by the other Baal Din, right? So, can Reuven disqualify the judge of Shimon? Can Shimon disqualify the judge of Reuven? That was the basic machlokos. Those were the two machlokos that we saw in the Mishnah. We also saw this line in the Gemara that why do we do this? Kadesha Yetze Hadin La'amito. And that was a critical line because we saw a major machlokos. We showed him as to what that means. Some Rishonim thought that each Dayan is trying to represent in one way or another.
Yes.
The Baal Din, the litigant who chose him, okay? Each judge is representing the litigant who chose him, or if not representing, as we saw in the rush, at least investigating his side. There are like two private investigators. He's going to investigate his litigant, he's going to investigate his. They'll come together, they'll decide which one has the stronger case. But there's some form of affiliation or association between the litigant and the Baal Din that he appoints. That was one position in the Rishonim. Second position in the Rishonim was that no, Yetze Adin La'amito doesn't mean that they're actually going to try to represent their respective Baal Adinim. It means that they're going to maintain total neutrality, because after all, they are judges. So why do we do this? We do this so that the Baal Adinim themselves, the litigants, will abide by the decision of the court, because each one will say, look, I appointed my own guy. In his mind, he thinks that that guy is going to represent his interests. In truth, the judges all maintain complete neutrality, but the litigants will abide by the decision of the court because of the fact that each one appointed his own dayan. And as we said, this may relate to this machlokas about the nature of Yetze Adin La'amito, or what that line means, what Yetze Adin La'amito means, may relate to one of the core questions regarding this concept of Zebor Lo Echad, namely, what is this based in of Zeborer? Is it just that, okay, each one's appointing his judges, and then this is a rabbinic court like any other, it's a based in like any other based in, or no? Is this not a full based in the traditional sense? It's not a rabbinic court, rather, it's some kind of arbitration. Right? It's not a full based in. Yetze Adin La'amito is not just a method of appointing a based in. It speaks to the quality of the based in as well. It's not just about how we appoint. It tells us that the dayanim themselves are a different kind of dayanim. It's not a standard court. It's a form of, it's like a kind of arbitration. We gave the example of what's real arbitration in halacha? What we call pshara, right? Pshara means that people come before the dayanim, and instead of looking in Shulchan Aruch and the appropriate siman of Choshen Mishpat, they'll say, look, this is what seems to be right in this case. They'll judge based on their own perceptions of the case rather than the strict letter of the law as spelled out in the poskim and Shulchan Aruch. That's pshara. So Zeborer is not exactly pshara, because in this case as well, they're still using Choshen Mishpat, they're still using the principles that the halacha has for them, but it's also a form of arbitration, where they're not a full based in.
Like lawyers?
Well, not quite like lawyers, right? We saw the Rosh who said, Chalila v'chas, should they be lawyers who are just making whatever case they can for their client? A lawyer is...
like using Shulchan Aruch.
Right, but a lawyer is hired to make the case for his client, regardless of whether or not it's true. Right, that's why there's the lawyer. What do they call it? Privilege. What do they call that? That lawyer client privilege. What do they call it? Something like that. Okay. And the Rosh says Chas v'Shalom.
No, clear. If you buy a towing now, isn't he using?
A towing is not really a halachic concept. Yeah, there, but they're lawyers. In other words, a towing is not. I don't know many Tanim, but officially their job is to make the case for you. Here the Dayanim's job is to derive the truth. Now, he's going to, as the Rosh said, he's going to investigate your case, right? So, let's say you appointed me as your Dayan. I'm going to investigate your case, and I'm going to come up with any possible tzad, any possible argument in your favor that I can. But at the same time, I'm going to assess each one on its merits. I'm not looking to make that argument if in the end I don't think it's true. In other words, I'll investigate your case, but I may come to the conclusion that really you've got nothing going for you. Mm-hmm. And if I come to that conclusion, I'm not going to argue on your behalf, right? So they're designated to investigate the respective claims of the litigants, but not necessarily argue for them if they don't think those claims are compelling. Okay? Fine. And we said that perhaps that's the Machlokes in Rav Meir and the Chachamim itself, or at least could relate to the Machlokes in Rav Meir and the Chachamim itself. Can you just get rid of the other guy's dayan? So we said it may depend on how you view this. Won't go over all the details. And what I do want to talk about today is something that we mentioned at the outset, but is worth going over. Let's have a Sanhedrin Chav Gimel's over here. Can we grab a sheet? So if you remember, when we originally read the Gemara, let's take it from the top, the Mishnah. Dine mamonos b'shlosha, zeh bora lo echad v'zeh bora lo echad. That's all the Mishnah says. Zeh bora lo echad v'zeh bora lo echad. This one appoints one and this one appoints one. The Mishnah is not entirely clear what exactly the procedure is. And as we saw, there were different positions in the Gemara regarding what exactly the Gemara is talking about, okay? One of them was elucidated by Rashi. Look at the first Rashi, Zeh Borer Lo Echad. Mashma Zeh Borer Lo Beistin Echad, Shehin Gimel. Okay, so Reuven appoints a Beistin of three. B'Zeh Echad, Harei Shisha. Shimon appoints his own Beistin. That creates six. Ushnehem Borerin Lohem Od Echad, Harei Tes. And the two of them come together and appoint a third Beistin. You now have how many judges?
Nine.
Nine.
When do we have a Bezdin of nine in Dine Mamonos?
Good question. That's what Tosafot Rosh asks. V'hainu d'kamatama, ma'izeh bora lo habatlas asagi. Rashi says, that's why the Gemara asks, why do you need nine? Three should be sufficient. Now, many of the Rishonim jump on Rashi. They don't agree with Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara. And one question they ask is, where do we ever find the case that you'd require nine? Why would you even think that you'd require nine in Dine Mamonos? We know from the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin, on Sanhedrin.bezimit Aleph, that Mamonos requires three judges, and that's reiterated by our mission at the beginning of the third parak.
Intuitively, you would think from the Lashon of the Mishnah, it'd be three. It says, Zebora Echad, Zebora Echad.
Shnein Boron Lan Od Echad.
Od Echad.
Good. Okay, so that's another question that Rishonim asked. That's the question that Tosos ask. It says, the preface is it by Dine Mamonos B'Shlosha. Then you're telling me it says Dine Mamonos B'Shlosha, and then you need nine? No, clearly not, right? But that's how Rashi reads the Gemara. And the question, there are many literary questions that the Rishonim pose on Rashi. There are always two types of questions that you can ask on a Shita. One is a literary question. How does that fit with the Gemara? A textual question. The other kind of question you can ask is a logical question. Why should this be the case, right? So the question that interests me for now is not the textual question, but the logical question. Why would we ever think that you need nine dayanim? So let's take a look at page 2 in section 2. First source 5, is that same Rashi, right? Mash b'zebor lo beisin echad shein shlosha, v'ze echad harei shisha, shnein bor len od echad harei tisha. Hava mina that you require 9. Ultimately, the Gemara rejects it. Okay? As we saw, and the Gemara says that each one is appointing his own dayan. Oh, so, Morty, because you asked this, let's just go through the sources themselves. I told you, a number of Rishonim don't like Rashi. So source 6, look at the underline. The lo nehira. Tosfos say Rashi's approach doesn't make sense. This is the top of page 3. Shehare mashma'os halashon ein okein. The implication of the Gemara, this is a textual question, doesn't apply that way. This is exactly your question, Morty, right? Because if that's the case, the Gemara should have pointed out you have a very serious problem with that, because the resha of the Mishnah directly contradicts the following line. Amrit dine mamonos b'shlosha, alma begimel sagi, v'hadarka amrit tzarech tisha, tzarech tes. Right? So your textual question on Rashi is exactly the question of Tosos. It doesn't make any sense. The Mishnah starts by saying Dinei Mamonos B'Shlosha and then says you need nine, and the Gemara doesn't make any comment about that. Can't be. But the Tosos Rush learns Rashi, asks the Kasha on Rashi a little bit differently. This is source 7, underlined section. V'kasha, b'meta ha-talmud l'farish ha-mishnah d'be'inan tisha. That's all he asks. Why would the Gemara ever make the mistake of thinking that the Mishnah requires nine? Why would we ever think that? Now, you can learn Tosfos Rashi is saying the same thing as Tosfos. Why would you ever think that the Gemara, that the Mishnah is saying that we need 9 if the Mishnah just finished saying that you only need 3? That's one conceivable way of learning the Tosfos Rashi. But it's also quite possible that the Tosfos Rashi here is not asking the textual question, but is rather asking the logical question. Why would we ever think that you need 9? That's a critical question for us. So if you look at the first line of the Gemara, right? Look at our girsa in the Gemara. Ma'izah bar lo echad, zeh bar lo echad, betlas asagi. What does betlas asagi mean? Betlas asagi means 3 is enough. That's what leads Rashi to say that originally we thought you need more than 3. Uh-huh. Now, as it happens, many Rishonim did not have that girsa in the Gemara. They didn't have those words, betlas asagi. Right? It just said, my zebor loechav zebor loechav. But Rashi's impetus seems to be that lashon of betlas asagi. Are there any cases where you indeed have more than 3 judges in the case of dinei mamonos? At least by zebor. So here we come to a very important Ramban. Okay? This is source 8. This is the Ramban on Parshas Devarim, on a very famous pasuk. It's made famous because its Devarim is always read when? In the time of the year?
Summer.
Summer, more particularly?
Before
Yom. Before? Before Tisha B'Av. Week before Tisha B'Av, right?
Oh, Devarim.
And how do we... Parashas Devarim. And how do we remember that? There's one pasuk. Echa esa levadi, torchachem u'masa achem v'rivchem. So more do you know this so well because it's your permissive parasha. Echa esa levadi, torchachem u'masa achem v'rivchem, which we always read in the tune of Echa. So what does it mean? Comments. Let's read the entire Ramban. The lashon Rashi misifrei. Rashi quotes the Medrash. Torchachem, melamit shahayu torchanim. Torchachem, the toils. They were troublesome. Haya echad mehem roa es baldino notzeach bedin. One of them would see. They'd bring a case to Moshe Rabbeinu. One of them would see that the other one was winning. Omer yeshli edim lahavi, yeshli rayos lahavi, mosif ani aleichem dayanim. He would say, I have more witnesses, I have more proofs, I want to add more judges to the case.
Why would it be?
Strange, right? Yeah. So the Ramban asks the same question. You're Machavin. Ba'adin hazeh lo yadati yoso. I've never encountered this halacha. And if the Ramban is saying that, that's a meaningful statement. Where do we find this notion that a baldin can add more than 3 judges b'dinei mamonos? And I've never found this notion that you can add more judges in the first place. And I've certainly never encountered this notion that you could add more judges after you already see that the other guy's winning the case. If he accepted upon himself a karov apostle, another important sugya in the third parak of Sanhedrin, certain cases you're allowed to say that even though a certain person is technically disqualified, let's say it's your father, if both litigants agree, come to a mutual consensus that they want him to judge anyway, they can establish him as their judge, even though halachically he's pasul. Very important sugya in Daf Chaf Dalet. But we'll leave off of that for now. The Ramban says, even though you're allowed to retract your appointment of a pasul dayan, namely, if they have that mutual consensus that they're going to use one of their fathers, and then one of them decides, you know what, this is not really going well for me, they're allowed to retract in that case. You can't be chozer if you appointed a kosher based in once the legal proceedings begin. You can't just decide, oh, the case isn't going in my direction, so I'm going to back out.
You waive your right.
Yeah, exactly. You're committed now. Says the Ramban, underlined section, source 8. V'shema nilmod mikan. Perhaps we should learn from here. Sheyachol adam lomar shnei dayanin ani borerli. V'tivror ata shnayim acherim. In general, how does zebor lo echad work? I appoint one judge, you appoint one judge, and we appoint a third. Says the Ramban, perhaps this medrash indicates that if we agree to a different procedure, whereby I decide to appoint two, you decide to appoint two, V'heim yivruru od echad, and together they will appoint a fifth judge. V'yehei hadin nigmar b'chamisha o yoser, and we decide that that in the end the decision will be decided by five judges or even more. K'moshe amru eino dome dina nigmar b'heila dina nigmar b'yud, as they say, it's incomparable. You can't compare a halacha that's been decided by five to a case that's been decided by a panel of ten. I'm sorry? I don't know if that's an expression in Chazal, or if it was just an expression they had in the days of the Ramban. I don't know. But apparently there was some notion that it would be better to have more judges. The more judges, the better. And even though technically three judges can force them to bring the case to court, if one of them is recalcitrant and says, I'm not coming to a Beis Din, three judges can come and say, you have to bring this to court. If he wants to appoint more, he's able to. And then he has an important line. That's our next sugya. So we'll leave off with the rest of the Ramban.
That's why the Gemara has it. Plus a saki, three is still enough. At the end of the day, three is enough.
Okay.
You don't have to get into all this.
Right, but what the Ramban is saying is that it's true. Three is sufficient. Three is enough. But in the event that they decide that they want more, they have the right to do so. They're able to just decide.
Why would the Mishnah even be thinking about this strange case that they're going to want more?
So that's the case. You're going back to the question on Rashi. All I'm pointing out for now, the Ramban isn't saying that's what the Gemara means. The Gemara means that each one appoints one. What the Ramban is learning from the Medrash, right? The Medrash, this strange Medrash on Parashas Devarim. This is a great example where an agadic Medrash is taken. There are halachic ramifications of an agadic medrash, or we make halachic derivations of an agadic medrash. That's always an interesting question. To what degree do we do that? Particularly for the Ramban. The Ramban has a famous passage in the Vikuach. Vikuach HaRamban was a disputation. 1263, Pablo Christiani argued that he can prove that Jesus was the Messiah from the Talmud, which was opened up a whole new era of Jewish-Christian polemic, yeah. Because in the past, all Jewish-Christian polemics related to what?
Wow.
The Bible. This was the first time that the Talmud was being marshaled by Christians in order to prove their beliefs. Now, that was a major, that was a seminal moment in Jewish-Christian polemics to the advantage of the Christians, because it had a very profound psychological effect on Jews. Because until then, the Talmud was their book that nobody else knew about. And now the Talmud was being marshaled by Christians. B, it also set up, there were a whole host of reasons why it was very advantageous. One of them was, it set up a no-lose situation for Christians. Why? If you're debating the Bible, right, the Christians are maskim, the Old Testament is God-given, right? If they can't find a single proof for Jesus in the Old Testament, that would be a very strong argument for Jews against Christians. In other words, you make certain claims, but yet there's nothing in the Bible that you recognize as holy that supports your claims. That was a very strong argument that Jews would have against Christians. Now, let's say Jews were able to prove that the Talmud doesn't really refer to Jesus. What would the Christian response be?
Who cares?
Yeah, the rabbis were wrong. So it was only, they can't lose, they can only win. In other words, either your own rabbis prove our beliefs, or your rabbis were wrong about their beliefs, but in other words, the best Jews could do was argue to a stalemate. So it really changed the dynamic of Jewish-Christian polemics. But in any event, in the first one, in 1263, it was Pablo Christiani against the Ramban. So the Jews kind of had it stacked in their favor, at least in terms of who was arguing. Pablo Christiani was not a Talmud Chacham. He was a Jewish apostate. But he was not a particular Talmudic scholar or anything. And the Ramban, you can count on your hand, the great, one of the greatest Talmudic scholars in Jewish history. So the Ramban did an effective job with Pablo Christiani's arguments. In the Tortosa disputation, 150 years later, 1414, then things were very different, because the Christians' sophistication in terms of their Talmudic mastery and their mastery of Medrash had been greatly magnified over the course of the subsequent 150 years. They really refined many of Pablo Christiani's arguments very well. And the Jews didn't have anyone the caliber of the Ramban at that disputation, so that was a little bit different. But for a couple of other reasons also. But in any event, in the Vikuach HaRamban, there's a very famous passage where The Christians are arguing about, making some argument about Nagada, okay? And the Ramban says, I think you're wrong, but even if you were right, not necessarily are all Agados binding in the same way that halachic sections of the Talmud are binding, which is, it's a controversial statement. It's one that many wonder subsequently, was the Ramban only saying that because he was in the context of the Vikuach, or was he just saying that because he really felt that that was the case? But the case was something like the Pablo Christiani said, oh, the Mashiach, there's a Gemara that says the Mashiach was born on the day the second temple was destroyed. So clearly the Mashiach, the Messiah, was born already. So the Ramban's response was, okay, first of all, if that's the case, if you really take that Medrash, then your Messiah is not the Messiah either, because he died before the destruction of the temple. He was certainly born before the destruction of the temple. And he says, and even if that were the case, again, it's an Agada, he says. That's like, so a lot of times he said, first of all, like, okay, you equally, if you might prove we're wrong, but you proved your own belief system wrong as well. And he also comments about Agada. But in this case, the Ramban is taking an Agadic Medrash, and he's deriving halachic rulings based on the Medrash, deriving halachic principles. And what is the Ramban saying? The Ramban is saying that in the case of Zeborer, you don't just have to appoint one and have the other person appoint one. You can choose, they can elect to appoint more Dayanim. So first we have this Hava Amina in Rashi, that what does Zeborer mean? I choose three, you choose three, we together choose three, and we have nine judges judge the case. And everyone's like, what is going on? Why should we ever have a Hava Amina that you require nine judges, as the Tosafot HaRash asks? And then we find that not only is there that Hava Amina, but indeed according to the Ramban, there can be certain cases where they do elect to indeed have more Dayanim. What's perhaps the most shocking of these sources when it comes to the number of Dayanim is actually source number 9. This is the Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat Siman Yud Gimel. Yeah.
I'm just saying, nobody says you can't have more.
What do you mean nobody says you can't have more?
Where's the halacha that says you can't have more than three?
We generally don't find, again, we generally don't.
If you look at the Gemara, it says sadi is enough, meaning it's enough to make it kosher, but it doesn't mean you can't
theoretically,
have more.
Theoretically, you could you have a base in Shalchav Gimel that judges monetary matters? There's no reason. Theoretically, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just generally not what's done. And
it's practically not a,
right, and this notion that they can... it's also... the Ramban is not bothered by the notion that a basin of more judges can judge. It's more the notion... the notion that's bothering him is this idea that the Baalei Dinim can just choose to add more Dayanim. In other words, generally we find that there's a whole system of Batei Din, right? This is, again, this is a first parak topic. But there's a mitzvah of Minui Dayanim, of setting up a court system, right? In Eretz Yisrael, and Chutz La'aretz, with certain differences, okay? And there's a whole hierarchy of different courts. Now, one of those courts is a Beis Din Shel Gimel. And as the Ramban says, as the Ramban points out, a Beis Din Shel Gimel can coerce two quarreling Jews to stand before them in din. Now, as we'll see, they could say, I don't want you, I want a different Beis Din. And certain circumstances will let them choose. But you can't just say, a guy's claiming money from his friend, you can't just say, no, I'm not going to court, sorry. Right? You have to stand in a court of law in order for things to be decided. Now, what's strange for the Ramban is that you can just decide to add more. Where does that come from? Where is this notion that you can add more? And he's saying that in the case of Zebor Lo Echad, then I understand that you can decide to add more. Yeah, Nathan.
Yeah. I don't see how Rashi can come out with none. When the Rambam says, Yochol Adam Lerma. In other
right.
words, he's not saying it's an absolute law that you have to have.
Absolutely.
Whereas Rashi is saying it's absolute.
Exactly. Rashi is much more radical than the Ramban. Rashi is saying that the Gemara thought that you need nine.
So this, the Ramban, what he's saying over here, maybe from here, this is no proof whatsoever for Rashi, that Rashi is...
absolute. I agree 100%. It's not proof for Rashi at all. They're saying different things. Absolutely. But the Ramban is far more palatable than Rashi, as you're pointing out. I'm just pointing out that even though Rashi, again, Rashi says that that's only the first idea in the Gemara, and Rashi agrees that the Gemara rejects it. Okay? We're wondering why would the Gemara have any Havamina? I'm just pointing out other ways in which the number here is different from, right, can change. And you're 100% right. This is very different, and it's much more limited in scope than Rashi. It's not saying that you need more every time. It's saying that they can reach a mutual consensus whereby they appoint more. Okay? But it's still a case where it is different from Rashi, but it's another case where we have some indication that the number here is different from the standard number. And again, let me show you the next source, because this is the most shocking one. Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat Siman Yud Gimel Sif Aleph. This is where the Siman Yud Gimel is where the Shulchan Aruch talks about this whole halacha of Zeborer. Echad mi ba'al edinim she'amar ish ploni yadun li, v'amar ba'adino ploni yadun li, hare elu shnei dayanim, she'baru ze'echab ze'echad, borim lahem dayan shlishi, we pass on like the Chachamim, okay? So, I appoint one, Reuben appoints one, Shimon appoints one, and the judges select a third judge. Now, take a look at the Ramah, source 4. Sorry, page 4. Ramah quotes a remarkable Ma'arivaya. We'll just take a look at the underline. V'im hashnayim haborurim yucholim lahashvos atzman. Top of page 4 in the underline. If the first two who are appointed, okay, agree what the halacha should be, yesh omrim te'in srichin livror shlishi. Ma'ariv Vayel says that if the two of them reach a consensus regarding who is right, who is wrong, they don't even need to appoint a third dayan. Now that is remarkable, and many attack this psak of the Ma'ariv Vayel. We know that every Beis Din requires three. Ma'ariv Vayel, biographical info, coming up short. Next week. But we know they have to come up. Yeah. Major post, like he's quoted in the Ramah and the postgame very often. How can you possibly, and it's quoted by the Ramas, the Ramas poskening this way, right? How can you possibly tell me that a Beis Din does not require three? We know that a Beis Din requires, it's true, if two of the three have a consensus that Reuven wins, we follow their psak. But every Beis Din requires three. There's this halacha of Shnayim Shadanu Dineim Din, Elish Nekro Beis Din Chatzov, but certainly halacha l'maisa, we always require three dayanim. How can the Ma'ariv Vayel say that only two are necessary? Thoughts?
Because they constitute a majority, so it doesn't make a difference.
Even when there's a majority, we always require three. It's true that we know that it's almost a formal issue. It's a formality because we know that their consensus is the same. We always assume that the third one may have had a different perspective. Part of the reason why you need three is because he may have had a different perspective and he may have been able to sway their opinion on the matter. He said, may have come up with an argument that they didn't think of. Even if it were true that their minds are made up, the formal structure of Beis Din requires that a Psak Beis Din has to be issued by three dayanim.
So this is not a
Beis
Din, this is an arbitration.
What were you going to say, Ben? Exactly the same thing.
But maybe they agreed to that.
So I think all of these issues of numbers all come back to that central question. It's another nafkamina of the central question. Of not how they are picked, but what is the method of picking or choosing indicated by the nature of the Beis Din. If this is a real Beis Din, then it's inconceivable to say what the Ma'ariv Vayel is saying. You can't say that you need two. A Beis Din requires three. And all those who attack the Ma'ariv Vayel and the Psak of the Ramah argue that this is a Beis Din, and because it's a Beis Din, you require three. How would the Ramah respond? The Ramah would respond by saying, this isn't the same as your average Beis Din. Shaldinei Mamonos. This is a form of arbitration. It looks similar to a Beis Din Shaldinei Mamonos, but again, this one appoints his, this one appoints his. Yetzei Adin La'amito, perhaps like the Rush, each one is examining the case of his respective Baal Din. It's a form of arbitration, and therefore if you decide that you want to do it through two, you could do it through two. By the same token, the Ramban says if you decide you want five, you could have five. If you want seven, you could choose seven. It doesn't matter how many you want to choose. You can choose the number that you want because it's arbitration. And I would argue that perhaps that's how Rashi understands the Havamin of the Gemara. Why would you need nine? Perhaps Rashi understood that this is not Dinei Mamonos B'Shulsha. It's true. A real Beis Din of Dinei Mamonos is three. This is an entirely different animal. What is this? This is a form of, not Pshara, but some form of arbitration.
You have the right to make this form.
Whereby you'd require nine. It's a recognized halachic form. What do you mean? Yeah, it's in the Mishnah.
Why would we have Beis Din, which is three?
And we have Zebor Lo'achad. And we have Zebor Lo'achad. It's a Mishnah.
But what's the difference between that and a regular Beis Din of three? Zebor Echad? I mean, or you're going to a Beis Din of three, which is paid by the community.
Right.
I mean, what's the practical difference between the two?
According to one perspective, they're radically different. One is a formal Beis Din, and the other is a kind of arbitration. And we said there may be all sorts of nafkaminas.
But it says.
Why would you need nine? For again, once we're dealing with a totally separate, maybe because it's arbitration, you'd require a greater number of dayanim to get involved. Maybe because
it seems to be a distinction without a difference. I mean, I don't know, you know, what's the...
Well, let's put it this way. If it's a real based in, it's totally inconceivable to have nine. Okay. Once we're dealing with arbitration, we're open to the possibility of having different numbers. Now you're asking. Okay, that's definitely true. If, in other words, if we're dealing with a standard based in, Rashi can't even get off the ground.
Okay.
Once we're dealing with arbitration, it can. Now you're asking me, okay, fine. Even still, once it's arbitration, why would we have more? So there we can construct arguments. If indeed you take the perspective that it's not that all the Baalei Dinim are fully neutral or fully unbiased, I can see having value in a greater number to try to counterbalance the...
As a requirement or as a choice?
Even as a requirement.
Okay.
Even as a requirement. You have three neutral Baalei Dinim, perhaps that has more strength than a single Baal Din. I'm not saying it's the most compelling argument, but I think that in order for Rashi to make sense,
okay.
I think it's far... And again, even according to Rashi, that Havamin and the Gemara is rejected.
Right.
But I think in order for... The premise must be... In order for the argument to get off the ground, that is arbitration rather than a formal based in.
I don't know, say for the Mishnah, it's talking about based in. It's talking about a based in.
Again, it uses the term based in. The question is this based in the same sense as the based in shel gimel of the ear, the based in ha'ir? Or is it something that's functioning differently? Now, you'd agree with me, Morty. It used the term based in, yet the Rush says that one judge is examining the case for one Baal Din and the other judge is examining the case for the other Baal Din. And that's certainly not what happens in a standard based in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know there are differences,
but then,
at least according to some Rishonim.
Why use the term based in?
Because, again, still because, functioning I mean, as a rabbinical court.
I mean, you would say it's a pshara.
It's not a pshara. It's not.
It's
what we would call based in shel zavla. That's the term that you'll find in the acronym.
You say arbitration or court, they're all tribunals. So it's like that's
right. No, so you have a generic terminology.
Because
Pshara is radically different because it's not even using Choshen Mishpat. So I understand what you're saying, but like I think Ben is saying, we're using a generic term based in. Based in Shel Zavla is different from a based in of the based in Ha'ir or something like that.
Is it possible that Rashi has to say this before his name? Now, if the Dayanim do the choosing, then go back to the beginning. Each one chooses. You're stuck. Because you'll never have a best in. Because if I choose a best, one judge, and he chooses one judge, and then we both have to agree on a third judge, we may never agree.
Right.
You can never go for
it. So you're showing to make that point, right? But how would that impact saying that you need nine? Why would that make you need nine?
So starting from the second, from the Rabbanim, Rashi is forced to say, therefore you have to have Dayan. It's a different concept altogether. In other words, the Chachamim is saying Bez Din, Rashi is saying arbitration, and the reason I'm saying arbitration is because if I say that the two litigants choose, we'll never get off the ground.
No, but again, why the two litigants... The two litigants can't choose together, right?
Right. They were...
But why? They can't choose together. But whether it's arbitration or a formal court, they're not going to be able to choose. Why does taking one approach over the other help you with that?
Because once I'm going up to a whole new Bez Din, in other words, a 3-3 and another 3,
right.
There's a possibility that then they can get together.
Really? Let's continue this. After, I think many Rishonim think the opposite is true, that it's easier for them to agree on one judge. They can't agree on three judges. They disagree about so much, there's no way they're going to agree on a panel of three. One guy will find someone that they agree about. Well, let's talk this out soon.
Are we going to read the rest of it? Because then he goes on to say you could have more.
Right, then he quotes the Ramban. Right, that's the Ramban that we just read in Source 8. V'yish omrim d'ma nitva omer shu yivor shnayim at v'yagam mitshayim im yivru etc. That's the Ramban. A couple of other quick nafkaminas. I don't know if we'll be able to see all of them inside, but let's just at least try to finish this topic today so we can begin a new topic next week. Another one. Hazara al Bre Rasa. I chose a Dayan. Okay. I'll take a cup actually. Thank you. I chose a Dayan. Reuven chooses a Dayan. Shimon chooses a Dayan. Now Reuven decides, you know what? I don't really like the guy I decided. At what point can he be called? Thank you so much. Until when can Reuven decide, you know what? I don't really like my pick. I want to trade it, change it. Trading picks in the draft, right? So source 10. Matzah, so let me give you a little bit of background for what source 10 is talking about. Bava Metzia Daf Chaf Menalaf, so I'm at a case where somebody found a shtar. Somebody found a document in the shuk. Let's say the document said, Reuven lent Shimon $100. And I find this document lying on the street. Now, I don't really know who to return it to. On the one hand, if Reuven hasn't been paid yet, who's the rightful owner of the document? Reuven, right? It's his way of proving that Shimon borrowed $100 from him. On the other hand, if Shimon already paid him back, then who's the rightful owner of the document? Shimon, right? Because at the point where he pays him back, he says, give me that document so that you can't go to court and claim...
Cancel it?
I'm sorry?
When they cancel it?
They generally tear it up.
Right.
But let's say he didn't tear it up so that in the event that Reuven took him to court, he'd be able to say, look, I have your document in my hands. You have nothing against me. What? I'm sorry?
Isn't a receipt given?
No, that's a machlokas what we do. So it's a machlokas whether we tear up the shtar or we write a receipt on the original document.
Right,
but in this case, exactly. In this case, we didn't, let's say, for whatever reason, they didn't write it. There's a concept of shtar chavili my boy. That's like returning the shtar. It's a machlokas in the Gemara Ksubas as to what exactly we do. Do we write on it? I think that's the position for Yehuda. Or do we tear it up? Kosvim shovar. But let's say, okay, so there's nothing written on it and you don't know who to return it to. You find it in the street. Matza igros shum, the igros mazon, all sorts of different, it's talking about all sorts of different documents that you find. Shtari chalitza umeyunin, documents that assert that a chalitza occurred or a miyun occurred. Miyun is a case where a katana is married off by her older brother and her mother and she rejects the husband. Okay, we're not going to get into that now. Ushtare beirurin, b'chol maisa beistin, hareza yachzir. Okay? One of the examples of shtaros that are listed in the Mishnah, shtare beirurin. Okay? Beirurin is some form of appointment or clarification, right? Gemara. My shtare beirurin. What is this shtar birur? Hacha tirgimu shtare tainasa. So some interpreted to mean a shtar asserting what each one claimed in a court of law. Okay? And based it. Rabbi Yirmiya Amar Zebor Elohechad Zebor Elohechad. What was it? It was a shtar stipulating who appointed whom. It says Reuven appointed Dayan X, Shimon appointed Dayan Y, together they appointed so and so, right? There was a shtar. They would write up a document which solidified or made some legal solidification to the appointments that were made by the two litigants. Now, what was the purpose of this? As the Rishonim will say, the purpose of this shtar was to ensure that once the shtar was written, you can no longer back out. Okay? I appointed Dayan X, you appointed Dayan Y. Once this shtar says, Reuven appoints Dayan X, Shimon appoints Dayan Y, Reuven can no longer say, oh, you know what, I really want Dayan Z, I want to get rid of Dayan X. No. Once the shtar is written, you can no longer be chozer. Here is the critical question, though. Let's say the shtar was not written, okay? Whatever it is, for whatever reason, they never got around to it. Then, until what point can they be chozer? Until what point can I say, you know what, I don't really like my appointment, I want to change it. Take a look at source 11, the Ramban on Bava Metzia there. We'll just start from, let's take it from the top. Rabbi Yirmiya Omer, Zebor Elohechad, Zebor Elohechad. Pirish Rashizal, Shelo Yuchlu Lachzor Bahem. Once you wrote that shtar, you can no longer back out. You can no longer change your appointment. Nira, she'achas shakasvu shtar beirurin ein echad mehem yachol lachzor bo, ba'ad shelo kasvu yucholim lachzor bohem. It seems that as long as you didn't write it, you can be chozer. Chein ikker she'im lo kein lama kosvim hare ein lachos shami shtaka chadavar v'yomer lo birartiv. If that seems correct, that you can be chozer if it wasn't written, because otherwise, what would be the purpose of writing it? You're going to forget who you appointed? The Ramban says, no, that's ridiculous. You're not going to forget. Why were you writing the shtar? Because until the shtar is written, you can change your appointment. Once the shtar is written, you can no longer change your appointment.
The Mishnah quote that a shtar would be written if it's in the
law of the death of Zeloah? It didn't come up in that Mishnah. We're not dealing with the Choshtaros. It's line number three. It's a little strange, but not terrible. There's clearly this concept. Look, that's not a kasha on any of the Rishonim. It's clearly a concept that's listed in the Gemara, in Bava Metzia, and it clearly doesn't come up in Sanhedrin. Is it a little strange that it doesn't come up in Sanhedrin? Yeah, it is. But that's not a kasha on any of the Rishonim.
If I was writing a Mishnah,
I probably would too, but alas, for whatever reason, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think it's a fair question, but again, it's not a kash on any of the Rishonim. It's strange. It's just an anomaly. I don't know if there's any answer for that. The first position of Rashi is, as long as it hasn't been written, you can be chozer. Once it's written, you cannot be chozer. Take a look at the underline. V'rabbeinu ha-gadol zal. I think this is referring to the Rif. Kaza b'tshuva. Shemi shabir is the first underline in source 11. V'rabbeinu gadol zal kaza b'tshuva. Shemi shabir lo dayan ladun lo. Yesh lo laksor bo ad sheyigmar hadin. Until...
Ad b'chlal or lo ad b'chlal?
Lo ad b'chlal, presumably. If it were ad b'chlal, then it wouldn't have any, right? This would have no, this court wouldn't have any authority. It's lo ad b'chlal. But until the point that they issue the psak, until that moment, he could be chozer. Umash b'dahani mili, the lo kasu shtari berurin. It seems as if, when is this true, if they didn't write shtari berurin? Aval kivon she'al piv kasvo, havalei kaman dekonomi neve, ino yochel asa b'kete kasivna. He says, like Rashi, the Rif would agree that if you write the shtar, you can't be chozer. But if not, until when can you retract your appointment? Until the very last moment.
But
you see that the case is not going in your direction? Until that moment where they say, ploni atazakai, ploni atachayev, where they issue that psak, you can be chozer.
But the third guy was picked by these two guys prior.
Okay, but once I retract my appointment, the basin falls apart. They would probably have to appoint a new third guy, right? Once I appoint mine, my guy can say, oh, I didn't appoint this third guy, right? I'm going to change it. Basically, it's a method of pulling the basin apart until the very last moment. The Ikoman de Amar, second underline in source 11, Mishetoanu bifnehem, af al pishalo kasvo v'lokanu eno chozer. There's a second opinion, okay, which says that no, they can't wait until the last moment. Once their claims are done, Mishetoanu bifnehem. Once I say, Your Honor, I rest my case, and the other guy says, Your Honor, I rest my case, I can't be chozer. Again, that's getting rid of the other guys. Now I'm getting rid of my own. I'm saying I don't like my own. That's getting rid of the other guys, Dayan. I'm saying I don't like my own appointment, okay? Eino chozer. V'yushamim perak zavor, matzasi kibel ala b'fnei shtayim, yachol lachzorov, v'nei shosha inu yachol lachzorov, v'zuraya l'lashon ha'acharon. We won't get into the raya for now, but we have a second opinion that says, what's the point? They can't be chozer. Once they made the tainos. Look at source number 12, the Rush. Rush on the same Gemara.
They made the tainos meaning.
When, again, Misha to'anu. Once they are finished with their tainos.
Okay.
So I said I rest my case. He says he rests his case. Fine. The Rush goes even further. My story berurin. Hachat yergimu story tainasa. Tainos hatovea v'anitva k'dei l'shalo yishanu es tanoseihem. Second line in source 12. Rabbi Yirmiyah Amar zebor lo echav zebor lo echad. Each one appoints, right, Zavla, as we saw. Shebe'od shalo nichtav yachol kol echad mehen lachzor. Right? Until it's written, they can each be chozer. Be'od shalo hischilu liton.
Well, that makes sense.
So the Rush is going even further and saying what?
Yeah.
Once they start there. So we have three. Let's deal with the two extremes for now. On the one hand, we have the Rif who's saying, until when can they be chozer? Until the very moment before the psak is issued. Until then, they can be chozer. We have the Rush, on the other hand, saying, they can be chozer until the case starts. Once they open the case, once the first guy starts making his taina, no longer can they be chozer. Okay? Now, in the middle, you have this other man, the Amar quoted by the Ramban, that Misha taught, once they made their tainas, you can't be chozer. But what are the two extremes? Again, I think this is a nafkamina of the same question. If this is a based in, it's inconceivable to say that you can start your case at the very last moment before they paskin, I can just be chozer and get rid of them. Okay? It doesn't make any sense. If you say it's a form of arbitration, this is a less formal based in, then it's still shocking to say that you could be chozer until the last moment, but at least we can understand why you'd be able to. Now for the Rush, so for the riff who says you could be chozer until the last moment, clearly what is this? This must be a form of arbitration. For the Rush, it's likely that it's a based in, and therefore you can't be chozer. And for the Rush, we could even claim It's arbitration, but you still can't be chozer. Now, what's the best proof to that? The Rush himself said, what does Yetzi Adin La'amito mean? It means that each Dayan is investigating
his side.
Exactly. So for the Rush, I think, it still is arbitration, but you can't be chozer once the Beis Din starts. Now, this is a great example of a nafkamina, where one side clearly must adopt a single position. The Rif clearly has to say it's arbitration, but the other side is free to take either position. It's important to note that methodologically, because a lot of people very often just make that mistake of saying, oh, if the Rif is forced to say arbitration, then the Rush must say the other position, which is not true, and that's why they run into all sorts of problems, because, oh, then I have a contradiction in the Rush, because the Rush on the one hand said the judges are investigating their respective cases, on the other hand he says that you can't be chozer, you know, once the case starts. So on the one hand he's saying it's arbitration, on the other hand he's saying it's a Beis Din. The answer is no. He's not forced to say that it's a Beis Din here. It's conceivable that it's arbitration, and you're still not allowed to be chozer once the case begins. So it's very important. It's just an element of rigor that I think is often lacking in the Beis Medrash, whereby, oh, if the Rif is bound to position X, it must be the Rush takes the other position, where it's conceivable that the Rush adopts the same conceptual position, but disagrees with the application. It's just an important methodological point. What would the middle Deya say? And the middle Deya would probably also be a form of arbitration. What would they say? They'd say that, okay, while they're still making, I think this is the way the middle position would formulate it, that again, the Rush is saying once the case starts, you can't be chozer. The Rif says until the very last moment you can be chozer. What's the idea that while they're still making their claims they can be chozer? I think the argument there would be that once the arguments are done.
But only if the shtar is not written.
Only if the shtar is not written.
Once the shtar is written.
Of course, yeah, no, that we know. But if the shtar is not written, what would the argument be? I think as long as they're making their tainas, the Balei Din are still a critical part of the process. The litigants are still involved in the process. Once they finish their tainas, then they're out of the picture. Now, this case rests in the realm of the Dayanim, the Beis Din, and the Beis Din alone. Once you've finished your part, you no longer have a say, and you can no longer be chozer on the Dayan that you appointed. But until that point, you can. Just another example, another critical case, where I think the machlokas may hinge on the question of whether this is arbitration or a formal Beis Din. Just two other quick examples. One is in source 4 of Eini Odeya. Just see the Shulchan Aruch. In biru lahem asara anoshim sheyadunu lahem bein bedin bein bepshara sheim lo yaskim ladas achas yelchu achar arov v'nistalek echem hem ve'eno omer daito o sheomer Eini Odeya afilu eskim atisha kulam ladas achas eno klon. This is a very interesting halacha whereby we say, in general, we say if two people say that he's chayev and one person says that he's pater, right, we follow the majority. But if one of them says, eini yodeya, ironically, if he says, I don't know, then we don't follow the majority and you need to replace him with another judge. Now, should this apply in a case of zebor aloecha? Should it apply in a case of zebor aloecha? So that is a discussion in source 14. The post can discuss that issue, but again, it could be contingent on the same thing of how do we view this? If it's a regular Beis Din, then the regular dinim of regular halachos of Beis Din should apply. And just like we say, Eini Odeya, in that case, right, requires a new Beis Din, or requires a new Dayan to replace him, we should say the same thing in Zebor or Loechad. However,
it makes sense in the case where we had before, I was trying to find it, the Shita that says if you have two and they both make up their mind, you don't need the third. So maybe that would fit in
theoretically, but not necessarily. Even the Mahari Vayo can agree that if you did appoint the third, and he says Eini Odeya, that you'd have to replace him. Now, conceptually, I agree with what you're saying.
Could it fit in?
Yeah, conceptually, I agree, because what I'm saying is that you're not bound to saying that by the Shita itself.
Right.
If you look at the conceptual underpinnings of the position,
right?
Yeah. No, yes. Then I do think they fit perfectly. The Mahari Vayo saying it's a form of arbitration.
Right.
Once you say that, then it's likely that all these strange halachos about Eini Odeya won't apply as well. One interesting final nafkamina is as follows. There's a pasuk. There are two ways to read the pasuk: Elohim lo sekalel or Elohim lo sekalel. What's the difference between reading the pasuk either way?
God or big G or little G.
What's little G? Don't curse Avodah Zarah. No, that's not what it means. So the word Elohim sometimes means judge. Exactly. So there's machlokas in the Gemara about how to read the pasuk. Is it saying don't curse God, or is it saying don't curse judges? So there's a discussion in the Pirkei Yosef. Should this prohibition of let's adopt the position of Elohim lo sekalel for now, right? should it apply to a Beis Din Shel Zavla? And he effectively, of the Achronim, is one of the people who very articulately expresses this this distinction. And he says, effectively, it's contingent on whether or not these are actual judges. If this is a real Beis Din, a real Beis Din Shel Zavla, then, yeah, you bet the Issur is going to apply, because these are real Dayanim, they're real judges. If it's just a form of arbitration, then perhaps not. But then he retracts. This is also a great methodological point. He says, perhaps, even if they are real judges, the prohibition won't apply. Why? The prohibition of Elohim lo sekalel is about cursing the representatives of the judicial system. Even if these people are real Dayanim, is this part of the official hierarchy of the Judaic court system? No, it's an ad hoc court that you've assembled for the purposes of your own case. So he asserts that even if Zavla is a real Beis Din with real Dayanim, it may also depend on the nature of what? The nature of the Isser of Elohim Lo Sekalel. Is this about just cursing judges? If it's about cursing judges, then you'll be responsible. If it's about cursing the representatives of the halachic judicial system, then perhaps it won't apply. Just like another great example of a good methodological rigor where you have to consider two issues, right? We always talk about this. You have to consider, on the one hand, the issue of Zavla. Are they real Dayanim or are they not real Dayanim? On the other hand, you have to consider the nature of what? Of Elohim Lo Sekalel. Is it about just cursing judges, or is it about, again, something about disgracing the judicial system as a whole? If it's just arbitration, then there certainly won't be an Isser. If they're real Dayanim, then again, it may depend on the nature of Elohim Lo Sekalel. But at the very least, that's another nafkamina that has to take this broader conceptual question of arbitration versus real Dayanim into consideration. And Be'ez Hashem, next time, we'll talk about what happens when there's no Zavla, but they still can't agree about what Beis Din to go to. One of them says, let's use the local five towns, Far Rockaway Beis Din. And the other says, let's go to the Beis Din HaGadol Shebi Yerushalayim, let's use the Badatz, whatever the equivalent may be. Maybe that's not the best example, we'll have to talk about whether it applies to B'Zman HaZeh. One of them says, let's go to the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, sitting in the Leshkas HaGazis. The other says, let's use the local Beis Din. Who do we follow? And we'll see, that's an important conceptual question as well.